It's August 5th, 2022. Time keeps passing. It doesn't stop. It's already August. It's going to be 2023 before we know it. So there's this reminder to be mindful, and sometimes it's difficult to figure out what is this mindfulness that we keep talking about. What is mindfulness meditation? So it's good to know what it is, to define it for ourselves. And there's various places in the suttas where mindfulness is hinted at or it's talked about. And we have the Satipatthana Sutta, of course, the four foundations of mindfulness. So there's these various ways to practice kayagata sati, or body mindfulness, recollection of the body, feelings, and then the mind, and what's translated as dhammas or mind objects. These four foundations of mindfulness, but it's still kind of, how do you actually do it? What is it exactly? Or there's this phrase, the arhant is one who is always mindful, so that can be helpful in figuring out what mindfulness is. The arhant never is someone who never forgets themselves, so mindfulness, sati, it has a sense of memory. So sometimes I think about it as remindfulness. It's like a reminder, remindfulness. So we're reminding ourselves at any given time, what are we doing? What are we supposed to be doing? And then that gets coupled with sampajanya, or clear awareness. In Thai, it's ru-rop, which is like knowing fully around, surrounded with knowing. So, or there's this phrase, atapi sampajano satima, which is ardent, clearly aware, and mindful. That comes up in the Satipatthana. So there's this sense of putting forth effort. We could also think of mindfulness as having a sense of vigilance. It's like a sentry guarding over the heart, taking stock of what's coming in. There's one sutta where the Buddha talks about mindfulness as a guard at a city gate. He knows who comes in and who goes out, even down to he knows if a cat came in or out of the city. And so he knows, he stands guard. He doesn't fall asleep while he's on his watch. So mindfulness is like a sentry, or it helps us to cultivate this sense of vigilance in the practice, so we don't lose ourselves. If we lose ourselves, then we could say we lose our mindfulness, and then we have to reestablish mindfulness. So when we reestablish mindfulness, it's putting the brakes on. What am I doing right now? What's going on? What's happening? So we can do this all the time, and as we practice longer, we're going to do it more and more. We'll learn how to reestablish mindfulness more and more. So when we're meditating and the mind suddenly gets caught by a train of thought and goes way off somewhere, then we can reestablish mindfulness. Wait a minute, what am I doing? What am I doing right now? Where did the mind go? So come back to the breath, come back to Buddho, and just reestablish mindfulness. And then mindfulness also reminds us to be clearly aware, to have sampajanya. So we're reminding ourselves just to be aware of what's happening in the moment. What's happening with the body in the moment? What's happening with the mind in the moment? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Is there suffering or is there happiness? Or is there some sort of confusion or anger? What's going on in the mind in the present moment? So Satipatthana, the first foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of the body. This is what Ajahn Mun and Lungpur Cha and the different Ajahns would talk about on a regular basis and put almost all their emphasis on that particular foundation of mindfulness. And I think that's just because that one, it leads into all the others. So when you're mindful of the body, certain things are happening in the body, if we're, that leads into mindfulness of feeling. So the body has, there might be pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feeling in the body. And then that's, we can note those feelings. And then that, those have an effect on the mind, which is the third foundation of mindfulness. Those feelings have an effect on the mind. There's pleasant sensation, pleasant feeling, and the default reaction in the mind is clinging, wanting more of that. And unpleasant sensation, the default reaction in the mind is pushing away, aversion, not wanting that, trying to get away from that. And neutral feeling, it's either confusion or wanting it to be pleasant and painful, wanting it to be more interesting somehow. So those foundations of mindfulness, they kind of all go together. Or the first foundation of mindfulness, when we're thinking about the body, it can be an analytical meditation. It doesn't just have to be focusing the mind in terms of trying to settle the mind just by focusing on the breath or on Buddho, but it's also an analytical meditation, stopping and considering what is the body, what is it made up of, and looking at how it ages and is impermanent over time. And then that leads to a sense of not being infatuated with the body and a sense of the mind settling, calming down, not feeling a sense of agitation around the body. That can lead to further settling, because a lot of our mental proliferations are around the body. What if I get sick? I don't want to get sick. I want to be healthy. Don't want to die, at least not today. I know I'm going to die, and the Buddhist teachings say, yeah, we're all going to die, but at least hopefully I won't die today or tomorrow or this year, hopefully, or next year. I want to live longer than that. Yeah, I know the Buddhist teachings say I age, but old age is a long way off. Yeah, Lungpur just turned 73, but that's 31 years off for me. So that's a long way off. Not going to happen anytime soon. Don't need to think about it. But practice is to think about it, to consider it. So if we don't really consider these things, we don't think about things like aging and death, then when they happen, we're not ready for them. So that's why we have to recollect them now. That's sati. Be aware of this, or recollect this, be aware of this. And the more we recollect aging and death, and the more we're aware of it, the better off we are, really, when those things start to happen. And so many examples in the world of people who are athletes reaching their 50s, 60s, 70s, they become very depressed sometimes if they haven't recollected death, if they haven't recollected aging, then they can become very depressed as the body degenerates. So because we took refuge in the body. So it wasn't a stable refuge to begin with, but we took refuge in having a healthy, athletic body that could do all sorts of amazing things. And then when it grows weak and it loses its energy and it can't do those things anymore, then we're not ready. We're not ready for that. So we prepare ourselves now for these things. Because really, in the big scheme of things, there's not that much time. So we were born and we grew up very quickly. I have a nephew who I met when he was 1 month old. It's the only time I've met him in person. He was 1 month old and holding him just a little, very tiny. Now he's three. And so they grow up very fast. And we can think all of us, so who was that? Like 41 years ago when I was an infant, what was that? Who was that? Was that me? Is that am I still in, I mean, I'm still an infant. The body and mind changes over time. So infancy through growing up, aging. Sometimes when we think we see children, we think they're young, but they're actually already old. They're already older than they were before. And so we keep growing up, and then we grow into maturity. Teenager, if we make it through our teens, then we reach adulthood, and then we might have various dreams and aspirations, careers, and then we look toward retirement, and then we grow older, and it just happens all of a sudden. Remember Lumpur Sumedho, when we were staying at Niu's house and for a couple days with Lumpur Sumedho before we sent him off to Tisarana Monastery in Canada, and Ajahn Jivako and I were there with him, and we were offering foot massage, and Ajahn Jivako asked Lumpur Sumedho, so like, how did your contemplation of aging help you to, for now, like how did that, what kind of effect did that have? And he said, well, it's just, you think about those things. And he was always, when he was a junior monk, he was practicing very hard and wanted to contemplate all these things that we were told to contemplate, aging and death and so on. But then when aging actually happens, it's good to know that it just sort of sneaks up on you. And one day you just realize, I'm old. So it's good to think about that. One day you kind of like, huh, I'm old. And there's this rule in the, it's a very minor rule in the bhikkhus, Vinaya, in the precepts, or the, it's not in the Patimokkha, not part of the 227 precepts, but there's about 2,000 very minor protocols that we learn about and try to follow a lot of them. One of them is to not look in a mirror out of being infatuated with yourself, or to not to be like admiring yourself in a mirror. That's a rule that we have as bhikkhus. But then it says, but it's allowable if you're looking for signs of aging as a contemplation. So it's allowable if it's part of the practice. So I was looking in the mirror the other day and noticing some gray hairs. That's allowable according to the Vinaya. And they're just slowly appearing. And I noticed even a couple white hairs. And there was one, at first there was just one, and now there's two. And so I noticed they're appearing slowly. So that's a contemplation. That's kayagata sati, that's body mindfulness, body awareness. And then when we think of death, there's these different contemplations, and it's not meant to make us depressed or morose, but just to remind ourselves to do what we can with the time that we're given, do what we can to do as many wholesome things as we can, do as much good as we can with our lives. Another point which been thinking about, it's not really necessarily on the topic of satipatthana, but it kind of is, but it's a very vital point that I think can't be stressed enough, and coming back to the Four Noble Truths and that idea of suffering or dukkha, that idea that it actually doesn't come from outside. Can't stress this enough because it's such a vital point that, and this is also coupled with a lot of the other Buddha's teachings, like there's that Dhammapada verse where it says, hatred can't be overcome by more hatred. Only by metta, by goodwill, can it be overcome, can hatred be overcome. So that points to the same thing, that suffering is arising inside. It's not something that's coming from outside. And get a lot of questions these days, like how do I react to world events, how do I hold that, etc., etc. And from a perspective of a practitioner, we hold it that suffering arises inside, it's not coming from outside. And yes, things that happen outside can act as a foundational cause in terms of it's something that the heart latches onto and picks up, and but then the suffering for us, it arises as an experience. It arises as our own personal experience, and that experience is just that particular experience of suffering is ours, and there's actually something we can do about it. So it comes from not wanting things to be this way. We want things to be different. We want things to be otherwise. We don't want it to be the way it is. So that's dukkha, that's suffering. And it's very insidious, and it really harms us, and we end up harming ourselves. So it's not, the harm isn't coming from outside, it's coming from inside. And that's actually a good thing. That's good news. The good news is we can do something about it because it's coming from inside. The good news is we can do something about it. If the suffering was truly coming from outside, we can't really do anything about it because there's very little we can do to influence world events. But there's much we can do to influence our own heart, our own mind. For example, in cultivating mindfulness. If we fight against things, if we make a point of putting a lot of effort to fight against things, and we have to be very careful about that, because if there's anger in the mind, that's a very subtle and yet vital and important point. If there's anger in the mind and we're fighting against things, what we're doing actually is we're trying to overcome hatred with hatred. What we're doing is all we're doing is, even though it may be the right thing on paper or the right thing, it might look like the right thing externally, and it can be very righteous. But all we're doing is adding more anger energy to the world, putting more anger energy out there. So it's, we have to be very careful. It's like Master Hua saying, when you protest a war, you have to be careful not to create another war. That really affected me when I read that Master Hua quote a long time ago. I think it was during the 2003, the Iraq War. There was this fear that they were going to reinstitute the draft. And I think I was newly ordained. And Ajahn Pasa Noh Ajahn Amaro were getting ready to send me to Thailand so I wouldn't be drafted. So that there was that very real fear, that very real concern. But that's about the time I read that Master Hua quote. When there's a war, you have to be careful not to create another war. So looking into peace within ourselves, how does that come about? One is through mindfulness, recollecting ourselves. Two is looking at how the suffering is arising inside. What can we do about that? And it's being aware of it. That's where mindfulness and awareness comes in. And it's related to the overcoming of dukkha, because when we really see how suffering is arising, nobody wants to suffer. We all want to be happy. Nobody wants suffering. Nobody wants suffering, and everybody wants to be happier. But the problem is we don't yet know how to get happier, and we don't yet know how to avoid suffering. So then, because of delusion, what ends up happening is our efforts to become happier end up leading to more suffering. So then the Buddha comes along and says, well, actually, this is how you become happier, and this is how you avoid suffering. When you see how suffering arises for yourself, then when the mind really sees it, it really sees that, oh, greed is a cause of suffering, anger is a cause of suffering, craving is a cause of suffering, clinging is a cause of suffering. When it really sees that, it can't do it anymore. It won't be able to do it anymore, because it'll be like putting our hand in a fire. You just pull your hand out automatically. The mind will want to pull out of suffering automatically when it sees the causes really clearly. So that's the importance of the Buddha talking about mindfulness and pointing to these Four Noble Truths, that craving is the cause of suffering. Craving is the cause of suffering. Can't be said enough. Craving is the cause of suffering. So the difficult part, though, why this is so difficult to see, is there is this gratification that happens. And sometimes when we engage in unwholesome actions of body, speech, or mind, there is this kind of gratification, very temporary. When the Buddha talked about anger, he said, anger with its poisoned root and honeyed tip. So it's got a slight good taste right there at the tip, but then it burns you. So it's like poison. So we get that, there's that little hit of gratification. So when we develop the mind of a contemplative or the mind of a practitioner, it's looking past that gratification to the further results. So what happens after that? We contemplate, we think about, okay, well, I could take that, I could have that. What happens afterwards? What's after that? What's next? The mind, I don't care. I just want it. So what happens next? So it's like the example with this is donut day. It's like, okay, there's a pile of donuts. They're really good. There is that hit of gratification. What happens next? You feel sick. You ate too many donuts. So that's a good... And how long does that take? It doesn't take very long. The hit of gratification is maybe... Well, however long it takes to eat however many donuts you decided to eat. A few minutes. And then... What's the effect, though? What's the result? Pain in the stomach. Maybe you feel sick. Feel shaky because too much sugar. And how long does that last? Can be hours. Could be all day. Your day is ruined because you ate too many donuts. So that's an example of how there's a hit of gratification. And many things are like this. There's that hit of gratification. Then the long-term consequences were far worse. So when we start to think of what are the consequences of doing different things, say, okay, well, maybe it's worth it to skip the gratification part and feel good all day, but it's difficult to do, so we're addicted to the gratification. So the Buddha's, he's having us look at addiction itself. We could think of craving as addiction. Or maybe we could think of clinging, upadana, as addiction. Looking at the nature of addiction itself, taking a look at that, considering that. So when we recollect things like aging and death, it can help us to focus more on the present moment and the task at hand, cultivating mindfulness, recollecting these things. Recollecting the nature of craving, suffering arising inside. We can do something about that. And whenever we have the opportunity to recollect ourselves and say, okay, what kind of work can I do on the heart right now? So a few days ago at tea time, thinking like, how do you gauge whether you're progressing in the practice or not. And one way, I remember Ajahn Jayasaro talking about this, is that somebody criticizes you or somebody says something to you that would have made you angry in the past, would have triggered you in the past. You don't get angry, you don't get triggered. That's how you know the practice is working. It's not about, I got such and such a deep state of samadhi, or I know a lot of people who claim to have had really deep states of samadhi and they've gotten unbelievably angry. Well, what kind of samadhi was that? It wasn't Dhamma samadhi. Yeah. Maybe it was genuine, deep, something very deep, but it didn't help with the anger. So when anger becomes less, when greed becomes less, when we're able to look past the gratification, when we're able to take things not as personally, then the Dhamma's working, then the practice is working. Whether or not we've had a very deep meditation experience or not, but we look for consistency, normality. We're not looking for extreme experiences. That's another addiction, looking for extreme experiences, looking for an extreme hit. You know, I want to get a deep meditation so I can get a big hit of samadhi, just get like struck by lightning, just develop all this wisdom. And it's not quite like that. But it's normality. It's just these ordinary things, looking at these ordinary things, these ordinary bodies, these ordinary minds. They're just ordinary. There's nothing special about these bodies. We're all the same, actually. So no matter what we achieve or what, you know, how strong we're able to make our bodies or what we're able to do in the physical realm, there's still aging, there's still death, there's those universal truths. So just coming back to that, it helps us to overcome being intoxicated, being infatuated, cooling the mind down. We'll stop making a problem out of things. We'll stop worrying about things, cooling everything down. So we want to put more of that into the world. Yeah, that's, I think that might help. So that's some food for thought this evening. Well, I think that's probably enough.